Sure. So, yeah, thanks for the invitation. And I will also say I'm here for 3 more weeks. So plenty of time to talk to me if you want to. And yeah, as Anusha said, my collaborators are Frank Kollmann, my supervisor in Dresden, and Fabian Heidrich Meissner from Munich. So I would like to talk about the work I've done in my PhD so far, the sudden expansion and domain formatting in ultra-cold atoms. So these ultra-cold atoms, from a theorist's point of view, they are very simple. You take some lasers and perpendicular, they create a lattice, and you put some bosons in there, and that's it. Of course, that's only from a theorist's point of view, and for the experimentalists, it's very much harder. But they can do a lot of stuff, and it's very interesting what they all can do. And usually, they implement the Hubbard model in one way or another. So they can do both fermions and bosons. They can also tune a lot of parameters. So for example, by tuning the strength of one of the lasers in one direction, you can tune the hopping in that direction. And yeah, in that way, it's possible to study a lot of interesting physics. For example, such a setup can be used to study the expansion of a non-equilibrium system. So you take you initialize your system by applying a trap such that you get some bosons in the center. Then you ramp up your lattice, you get a mod insulator, and then you can release the trap and study how the mod insulator expands. And that's precisely what I want to discuss today. So first in a clean environment, and later in the second half of the talk, I will add some disorder and study the system in the context of MBL. As you can see, this also really nicely compares between experiment and theory. So this is for the experiment, and this is data for the theory. And this is in particular for a 1D system, so it's exactly this setup for a 1D system. And you'll see it agrees very nicely. But that's harder. This kind of simulations to do is harder in 2D, and that's also what we have studied to kind of try what we can do. Whether we can do such simulations in 2D. So it's in particular motivated by this experiment which they have done. The Hamiltonian is just the Bose-Hubbard model. You have a hopping with hopping amplitude jx in x direction, with amplitude jy in y direction, and additional an interaction term. And yeah, that's what they get out of this experiment. So chi is here the ratio between jy and jx. So this is basically the 1D case. And you see that it's a fast expansion. So you have a fast expansion in both directions. Whereas if you tune on the interaction, you see that there remains a strong core in the center, and the expansion to the outside is very much suppressed. So it's here you can see the core expansion velocity. So you just take this figure and calculate the half width of half maximum and look at the time derivative of it. And that's what's plotted here as a function of the interaction. So for non-interacting system, you have just three bosons, and they expand ballistically with velocity 2. If you are at the very strong limit of infinite interactions, in the 1D case, you can map it back to the fermions. In the 1D case, you have basically only one boson per side, so you can map it back to three fermions, and it's again a ballistic expansion. And in between, you have some valley due to the interactions, which suppresses the expansion. So this line is for the 1D case, for very small
And what time do you get this measure, this velocity, right?
Basically over over all this part damage. This is the blue line here is the 2D case, the full isotropic 2D case. And in that case, you see that it goes down to zero and remains zero. So in the 2D case, you have the core, which remains in the center, and the expansion is not possible due to energy restrictions. So that's very much the motivation of our work.
So the 1D case, there's no energy restriction? I mean, there's no trap, or is it flat?
So in the 1D case, you have ballistic expansion because, if you have infinite interactions, it's just free fermions.
Yeah, but there's still a potential trap.
No, the potential trap is released. So you initialize your system with a potential, but then once you have your initial state, you completely remove the trapping potential and study the expansion in a flat landscape. Okay, so further questions?
And how is, in the 1D case, how would that be affected by having doublons in the system?
Doublons, they basically suppress the expansion. So it's not perfect, but I think it's still going on.
If I remember right, if you take the infinite unit, then as I said, it can map into a free fermion.
Yeah, so I will discuss it also later in more detail.
System. So you get ballistic transport, but
right.
But for finally, if I remember right, it's not in a critical system.
One D is not.
I think it was only one D is not in critical.
So that's basically also what you see here, that it's very much suppressed, right? So in 2D, the basic idea is that the interaction, if you would take out a boson, you would have to pay energy because they are. So it's basically energy restriction, I think.
So is it you mean feel more insulated?
Yes. Yeah.
So that has like a zero energy?
Right. Right. So actually, I'm not exactly sure about the mechanism. So it's what we observe. Yeah. So this is the outline of the talk. Before I really study this expansion in detail, I would like to discuss with you how we actually can simulate this. Because in 1D you can use DMRG, but in 2D it's much harder. And then I will show you the results for this expansion, and later I will go on to the dissonant system. So how do we simulate this? We use, the goal is to really study this. It's a Schrödinger equation in full detail. So we write down our initial state, and then we want to apply the time evolution operator. And we make this by using matrix product states, which are an efficient representation of finite entanglement states. So they can be written like this. Illustrated, they're usually like this. You have, I don't know how much you're familiar with it. So you have each of these dots represents one matrix. And you have three indices. One is the physical one, and you have two auxiliary indices, which are connected here, which corresponds to taking some matrix product. And if you contract this network, then you have the coefficient for the corresponding sigma 1 to sigma L. These matrix product states, turns out, are only a tiny corner. So if you have finite matrices here, you can represent any state with a finite entanglement. And this is a tiny corner of your whole Hilbert space, which is on the one hand why it's very efficient, because you have only a tiny small corner, and your Hilbert space is exponentially big. But on the other hand, that's also a problem, because if you apply time evolution, at some point we will end up with a state which has a higher entanglement. So if you get out of this tiny corner where we have, where we can represent our state, we have basically to stop our evolution. This matrix product state is based on the idea of DMRG, and as you probably know, it's it works very well in 1D, but in 2D it's much harder, because you have to map this 1D state to a 2D, it's a 2D lattice, a 2D physical lattice to a 1D state. So this green line represents how we have actually our matrix product state. And then if you do so, you see that you have long-range interactions and hoppings, which arise just due to this mapping. And it's exactly these long-range interactions which render the usual methods of DMRG and TDMRG, for example, and TVD, break down because of this long-range interactions. So we need another method. And the idea is to use the generalization of the matrix product states to operators, so-called matrix product operators. So we have exactly the same thing, just that we have not just one physical index, but two, and right. So when we want to do that, we have to find a way to represent our time evolution operator as an MPS. So we start by getting our Hamiltonian, and then we represent our Hamiltonian as an MPS, and then we find a representation of the time evolution operator. And the basic idea of the method which I was using can be summarized like this. Instead of tailoring this and breaking, cutting it after the first term, if you take just this, you see that you have an error which goes with L squared. And the idea is to improve this simple expansion to a product of these terms. And if you do so, because you apply this local term in parallel at each side, so to say, you see that you get a reduction of your error. Whereas this, it scales with L squared here, it scales with L, so we have a constant error per side, which you have. So this works by, you take this product and you neglect overlapping terms. And if you do so, you see that it comes down to this expression. And here, these terms are exactly what you take into account if you take this. And they reduce the error, because you have only the remaining error which you make is only where x and y coincide and overlap. So it's only a local term. The method, so once you have your Hamiltonian, it can be painted like this or the drawn. So this is a nice way to illustrate how you construct your MPS or MPO. So your few your operators, your matrices here are basically linear operators going from these to these. And so you view this indices here as some finite states. And you start at the very left with a certain state, then you apply an operator, you change your state. So for example, you can apply an A dagger here, then you are in the state say one, then you apply an identity operator, then you are in the state two, and then you apply A, and then you end up in L, and then you have a second nearest neighbor hopping, right? And that if you take this and change it a little bit, how you draw the arrows here, instead of going to the final state, so the left, the right and left here, basically what's on the very right and very left, the only state which you have. And if you, instead of going to a final state, you go back to your initial state. If you do that, you basically implement this product. If you have further details, you are welcome to ask me now or afterwards. But I would like to go on now. And yeah, if no questions, then I'd like to go on and show you actually the results which we have. So the Hamiltonian now is again just the Bose-Herbert model, and we take the limit of infinite strong interactions just to make it more simple for us for the numerical calculations. So we take hardcore bosons and restrict to at most one boson per side. The geometric setup is just like that. So you take a square lattice, and you take bosons in the initial state, and just in this region, you put it in a product state where you have one boson per side, and then we just look at the time evolution. Later, I will also go to ladders and cylinders to quasi 1D systems. As you will see. Let me now discuss the 1D limit first. So in the 1D limit, these hardcore bosons, as mentioned already before, map to free fermions. So these free fermions you can solve exactly. This is a dispersion relation. And when you write down your initial state, you can calculate your momentum distribution, and it doesn't change because it's free fermions. However, if you map it back then to the bosons, you will see that it actually does change. And this is momentum distribution from the boson point of view. And you see that you have a so-called quasi-condensation at finite momenta plus and minus p half, which is exactly where the energy is zero. So due to energy restriction, it's only possible that you have these states. And in contrast to usual Bose-Einstein condensation, where you condensate into the ground state, in this setup you condensate into states with finite momenta. But it's only a quasi-condensation, so if you take the limit of very long times, the distribution gets flat again. And so it at some point it drops down again. Yeah. So now I finally come to our results. So this is how the density distribution looks like. In 2D, we have a system of 12 by 12 lattice sites, and we take 4 by 4 bosons. So this is basically as much as we can do. So the initial state here is the initial state at t equals 0, and then this is after 1 hopping times, and this is after 1.5 hopping times. And this is in basically the 1D limit of very small hopping in y direction, whereas this is for the isotropic case, so isotropic 2D lattice. And you can see that it nicely agrees with what I've shown you in the experiment. So in the 1D case, you have a fast expansion, whereas in the really 2D case, you have also this kind of core which remains in the center and only a few bosons which go out in the spread out. And it's also remarkable that we have kind of a round shape as in the experiment, which we think is due to diffusion. However, this is only for 1.5 hopping times, and it's only 4x4 bosons. So it's a quite small system, and our system is still dominated by surface effects. So we can't really simulate the bulk of the cloud, but it's very much dominated by these by effects of having these boundaries. So that's why we decided to also look into quasi one-dimensional systems. We have looked at the momentum distribution. I have no pictures here right now. You can look it up in the paper. You also see a kind of quasi condensation at momenta which are allowed. We get only 1.5 hopping times, so we can't really say about what it is. You see that you have an increased occupation at momenta which are allowed by energy conservation. Right, so this is for the quasi one-dimensional systems. So we take the same system, but on a long cylinder or ladder. And again, we take some bosons in the center and then remove the trap and let them evolve. And here it's again for the small variable Tx. You see a fast expansion in the X to two jets going out, whereas here you see, again, as in the experiment, a strong core which remains in the center. Time is gone.
Can you go back to the previous slide? So if you look at the very isotropic limit, the graph on the left.
Yeah.
Anisotropical. Right. So if you look at the profile at late time, at t equals 4.0, yes. Since there are two peaks.
Right. So it's two peaks. You have this initial cloud, and what you see is basically as in the 1D limit here, that you have one peak going left with constant velocity going to the left, and one peak with constant velocity going to the right. Right. I also want to introduce this quantity delta n, which is just to sum up all the occupation outside of the initial state. And it's plotted here. And you can see that it continues to grow, again, for the small jy over jx. What I also compare here is domain wall setup versus such a setup. And you see that it agrees very nicely on short timescales. So the idea is very simple. If you take this setup and look at it, for short times you have only you have Lee Robinson bounds, and for short times it matters only what's happening right next to the boundary here. So you can view it as a domain wall. And that's basically also what you see. What's very remarkable too is that it's very much suppressed here. If you take this is on a two-leg ladder, and if you take the isotropic case, you see that the expansion basically stops here. Whereas on a three and four-leg ladder, it continues to grow, and we have traced this back also to kind of energy conservation for this quasi-condensation. So this is also shown the velocity, and you see it's a much higher velocity and on the four-leg ladder versus the two-leg ladder. So the basic idea is that you take the system and take just a single slice, and then you look at what states are possible. And if you take only a two-leg ladder, you have only two states which have plus or minus j, and these cannot cannot be used for the expansion due to energy conservation, whereas if you take such a four legs, such a cylinder with four legs, so to say, then you have additional states at energy zero, and these can actually expand. So that's why the velocity on the four-leg ladder is much better, much higher than on the two-leg ladder. Yeah, with that, I would like to go on to dissolved systems. So I don't know how many of you are experts. I guess many of you already know MBL. So the idea is very simple. You take your system and you add some disorder. And it was already shown by Anderson in 1958 that if you do that for a single particle, that you have exponentially localized states. So the wave function drops exponentially in space. If you add interactions, the story gets much harder to calculate. So it's again illustrated nicely in this picture. So you take a single particle state, for example, here at this energy, at the space, and here, and then the question is whether the interaction between the particles leads to a hybridization of the states. And can actually lift as a localization of the single particle states. Instead of listing all the properties which you either know or you won't remember if I just shortly mention it, I would rather focus on the experiments. So there are basically two experiments which I want to present here. The first one was done, published 1 year ago, or 1.5 years ago. In this latter system, it's actually quite hard to introduce disorder. The simple approach, which was also done in this experiment, is to use two lasers with an incommensurate frequency. So you will have a second term, which is just a cosine of 2 pi r and lattice constant, lattice j, and r is an irrational number. And by that, you end up with such a potential. And of course, it's not really too random, but it's correlated disorder. That changes a little bit. So for example, if you have the purely non-interacting case, it was realized by Aubry and André in 1981, I think, that you have a disorder to localized to non-localized transition at J here and at this point. And in the experiments, they able to see this nicely. So what they do here is to initialize the system in a charge density wave, and then they let it evolve in time and monitor the imbalance, which is just the number of particles on even side minus number of particles on odd sides divided by the total number. And in this state, it's basically one. So that's where they start with, and with time they see that it either drops down to zero in the ergodic case, whereas it shows very nicely the failure of thermalization, that the imbalance does not go to zero if you are in the non-ergodic case. Yeah, so that's one of the nicest experiments about MBL. Another one appeared just 3 weeks ago on the archive. And in this case, they have used a digital mirror device. So they have very small mirrors which they can which they can address electronically. And by that, they can really create a disorder. So they can basically that set the potential at each lattice side and create a disorder, a true random disorder. And yeah, in this case, again, the Bose-Harvard model with trapping potential in the disorder. And that's what they see. So the left here and here is for single disorder realization. This is for the average over different disorder realizations. And if they have no disorder, then you see that the initial state, so what they prepare is what we call a domain wall. So you have one half of the system which is occupied, and the other half is removed by a laser pulse. And then if you look at it at light times here in the non-disordered system, you see that it equilibrates perfectly, whereas in the disordered case, you see that there's the equilibration is not perfect. You can also write down an imbalance again, and you see that you have a finite imbalance. So we have the work which I present now is also very much motivated by this experiment. So this is just a setup. In this case, we have used spinless fermions. And the basic idea is just that you take this domain wall and look at it at late times. And if you have localized states, so if you have put a particle here and it's localized, you would expect that it can't really spread out. So you expect exponential decay far on the right. And so that's what we basically see. So we first check it with non-interacting case where we can do really large systems with ED, both in the uncorrelated and correlated case. And then we introduce interaction. The hopping is chosen such that the model maps to the XXC model. And for U equals to J, it's the isotropic Heisenberg chain, where we know that the transition is at 3.5. Right. So here are the results for the Anderson insulator. The Anderson insulator in 1D is localized at any disorder. So that's the density profile, and you can really see this exponential decay at a log linear scale. On short times, you see some drop off due to Lieb-Robinson bounds. But in the large time limit, you see an exponential decay. The dashed line corresponds to the single particle length, which you can calculate analytically. So you see it's a little bit higher. I think it's, so we are not completely sure why it's a little bit higher, but I think it's due to the different distribution of the localization length of the single particles. It's not perfect. So it's not a delta function, and I think it's due to that fact that we are a little bit above this. But at least the scaling with W is perfect. So you would expect a scaling with 1 over W squared, and that's exactly what we see here. Right, so deviations at very small W are basically due to finite times and finite systems, and at really large W, you drop off so fast that you can't really extract the localization length here anymore. But otherwise, it's quite perfect. And it's also perfect if you look here at this localization length and compare it. So the blue is what we have calculated. And the red one is the analytical result for the Aubrey and Ray model. And you see that it also diverges at a critical point at one. I also want to introduce here the variance and delta N again. So delta N is again just what is on the right half, which was initially empty. And the variance is if you take this distribution which we have and just view this. So if you take this figure and view the density distribution as a distribution in space and calculate the variance. So that's what's plotted here, and you see the variance goes on a log-log scale with power law. It's quadratic here, so it's a ballistic expansion on the ergodic side, whereas it levels off to a finite value in the non-ergodic case. Yeah, so then we add some interactions. This is what we see in the interacting case. So for a very small disorder, which is far beyond, far below the critical disorder, you see that it spreads over the whole system. So it's a 60-side system, so 30 to the left and 30 to the right, and here's the boundary. And it really, you have particles all over the system at just times 30. Whereas if you take a very strong disorder limit, then you see that you get stationary profiles even at very short times. So this is not only the time 1,000, but it's all these times. It's 10, 20, 30, 60, 200, and 10,000 are plotted here, and they all agree. So after just 10 hopping times, the state is already stationary. And interestingly, if you take this order, which is a little bit below the critical point, so which you see that it still kind of drops off with what seems to be exponential. And if you take the localization length of this drop off, you see that it coincides basically with the single particle length. So our picture, which we have at the moment, is that you have an expansion on the order of the single particle lengths on short length scales, but eventually you might spread over the whole system because your eigenstates are extended, but this spreading may take a very long time. And you see this also if you look at the variance or the delta n here. So this is a log scale, and you see that that delta n, and the particles of the number of particles to the right, goes only very slowly on a log, on a what seems to be a log scale. And so it seems to be a really slow expansion. We've also tried to make a fit here, and so you can. We've made a fit here, and to a log constant times log plus another constant, and if you plot this C versus disorder, you see that it is non-zero for W below the critical value, whereas as you would expect, it's zero above. So that's a way to extract a critical point, and it seems to coincide with the known value of 3.5. Yeah, as a first step towards...
what is it about this data that tells it to anybody as opposed to single body localization?
Second, so...
How do you know it's many body and not just Anderson localization?
So it's an isotropic Heisenberg chain. So the system which we studied here is 1D. So it's this system,
yeah.
And we have interaction which is equal to J. So it's an isotropic Heisenberg chain, and we know that we have many-body localization. So I don't. Okay. Okay, right. Yeah, so as a first step towards 2D, we have also run the simulation on a two-leg ladder. And again, we find a very slow expansion with if you extract the slope of the lock here, it seems to level off at 8 or 9 or something, which is on the same order as the critical point, which was found in a Heisenberg for the Heisenberg model on a ladder. Right. With that, I would like to thank you for your attention and ask for questions. The first part to the clean ladders is all written up in this paper. The later part is in a paper which we have basically ready now, and it should appear on the archive within 1 week, definitely. Right.
I guess my question was maybe about the experiment. You showed this experiment as an experiment. So what is the specific evidence there that you're seeing many body localization as opposed to one body localization?
I think the fact that they say transition at all, that's what they would say. So in 2D, if it was truly Anderson localized, you should not see imbalance ever decay zero, but they have a regime up to, I don't know, disorder overhopping to 5 or something.
Right.
Experiments so, where they argue that you really see complete expansion to disorder average equal density at a site. So that would be the.
Yeah.
But is there a transition, I guess? Or
there would be a transition only with interactions. So they would say, okay,
yeah.
So it's about the experiment again.
Yeah.
Have they compared this critical delta with what the ground state phase diagram predicts, like for the both through superfluid transition?
Not in the paper which I have published.
So there's some estimates for how far away they are from the ground state energy density, mm-hmm. and it's significant. So, but it's worth doing to see how.
No, yeah, I understand. I just want to have a feeling for whether or not this is maybe related to that same transition or not. So.
Yeah, it's also worth mentioning that these systems are quite small, so it's only 20 or 30 lattice sites. So this is really single site resolution. Any further questions?
You showed the is it if you waited for longer times that you would eventually see
I guess so, though. In this case, we can't do longer time evolution. So, we basically have to stop at 30 or something. But I guess at very long times, I guess you would see.
But are you, and this is not, these times are too short to be meaningfully talking about diffusion or that thereof.
Right? Yes. So at least in the ergodic case, yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, well, let's thank you, Hannes, again.